Now
on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
Good morning. It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. Jeff Wolf is behind the console. Jane Houghton and our producer this morning. The latest on the airstrikes in Syria against the Iranian guard, the arm of the Iran army. And we'll get into that momentarily. Other things that we're going to cover on the program this morning, of course, the TikTok hearings on Capitol Hill, the very latest there. Biden poll numbers aren't looking too good right now. We'll get into the very latest there and really gone downhill since the last month's polling around the country. Also, this morning, we're going to be talking with John Gizzi, White House correspondent at Newsmax. Gordon Chang will have the very latest on TikTok, and we'll be talking a lot about the TikTok hearings this morning and what that means moving forward. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer will have his read on what's going on with those strikes against our forces in Syria. And also this morning, KT McFarland will kind of put it all in perspective as we look at what's going on with the Putin-Xi meetings happened this week in Moscow, of course. And KT always has a way of kind of connecting the dots from the 50,000-foot level. So we'll be talking with KT about that a bit later on this morning. Cheryl Atkinson will join us. So we have a strong lineup for you today. But first off, let's get in a little more on the very latest with those airstrikes. Now, the death toll in U.S. airstrikes on these pro-Iran installations in eastern Syria has now risen to 19 fighters, and that's from a Syrian war monitor, a report this morning on Reuters. U.S. carrying out strikes in eastern Syria in response to that drone attack on Thursday. Now, that left one American contractor dead, another one wounded, along with five U.S. troops. Washington says that the attack was of Iranian origin, and General Pat Ryder, the Pentagon spokesman, goes into a little bit of detail here about the U.S. response.
Austin, at the direction of President Biden, authorized U.S. Central Command forces to conduct precision strikes into eastern Syria against facilities used by groups affiliated with Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps.
Pat Ryder continued, and Jennifer Griffin was at the Pentagon briefing, and she asked the general how it was able to crash into the base. And this is the response from Brigadier General Pat Ryder at the Pentagon.
So if you say the radar was working, and if you were tracking it, and drones don't fly that quickly, how is it that it was able to crash into the base? You say that you're protecting those bases.
Look, again, this is a dangerous part of the world. The work that we do is inherently dangerous. That's why you have the military in these types of places conducting these type of operations. We've seen rocket attacks, mortar attacks in the past from these kinds of groups. Again, CENTCOM will do an assessment in terms of the attack. But the fact is that these IRGC-backed groups conducted this attack, and unfortunately we had an American kill.
But why wasn't there a contingency to shoot down the drone if it was coming into the base?
Again, look, we take a variety of measures to safeguard our people. But again, it's an inherently dangerous place. And again, we'll look into the details of the actual attack. Thank you.
President Biden said yesterday, warning Iran that the United States would, quote, act forcefully to protect Americans. Now, this is in the wake of some testimony on Thursday of General Mark Milley, who was on Capitol Hill.
Iran could produce fissile material for a nuclear weapon in less than 2 weeks and would only take several more months to produce an actual nuclear weapon. But the United States remains committed as a matter of policy that Iran will not have a fielded nuclear weapon.
So you may ask, why is all this happening now? What's going on? Well, Brett Baer asked that question of Republican Senator John Thune last night.
It's never our strength that tempts our adversaries. It's our weakness. And I think they're testing the Biden administration. And I think so far, if you look at it based on the continued and repeated attacks that we're experiencing there, they failed the test. And this administration is, I think, perceived on the world stage to be operating from a position of weakness. And anytime that happens, you're going to tempt people, the Iranians, the Russians, the Chinese. There are a lot of folks around the world right now, Brett, that are paying a lot of attention to what's happening here and seeing how the United States responds. And when we have, when these are unprovoked attacks against American service members and obviously this American civilian contractor yesterday, we've got to respond strongly. That's the only way that you meet these types of threats, is you've got to meet them with strength. And I think this administration, as I've said before, and I think many of us have said, is perceived on the world stage to be operating from a position of weakness.
And we mentioned the hearing that General Milley was at on Thursday. Well, earlier in the week, there was a Senate Armed Services Committee hearing, and Eric Schmidt was grilling some of the Pentagon officials, and he is a Republican senator from Missouri, and here is his question.
This sort of obsession with this equity agenda that you all are defending here today with just sort of a word salad is divisive. And the military literally has stood as this most respected institution where people can achieve, like, great things and protect this country. And here we are in a committee hearing when China is, like, militarizing islands. They mean business. And we're having to spend time to talk about DOD's $114 million budget request for diversity, equity, inclusion, training. This stuff is nuts.
So that's how Republican Senator Eric Schmidt of Missouri feels about things. How does the country feel about President Biden? Well, not doing too well. A recent Associated Press NORC poll came out this week. The president's approval rating in February was 45%. The end of March, his approval rating down 7 points at 38%. How do the American people feel about the economy? 68% say it's going in the wrong direction. Only 31% approve of the president's handling of the economy. What about the direction of the country in general? 78% say we're on the wrong track. Only 21% say that we're on the right track. So that's a sense of how the American public is feeling about all of this. Well, it is 6:17. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Mike Franciotti is in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Montgomery County, along Columbia Pike, U.S. Route 29, Lockwood Drive, still have the accident there. All three northbound lanes are closed. Southbound, you lose the left lane. Northbound, BW Parkway, as you approach 175, the left lane there is taken away. Going into Virginia, Interloop at Van Dorn Street, still have the accident there, and you're losing at least two lanes. And in Woodbridge, northbound Route 1 at Rosedale Court, we've got the accident there. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Storm Watch 7 forecast.
Showers stick around through lunchtime, but after that, rain goes away, clouds will be on the decrease, and a little bit of sunshine to end your Saturday. Temperatures into the low 60s right around 6 p.m. Tonight we fall down to 49. Tomorrow it's 68 for a high temperature. Northwest winds around 15 to 20 miles per hour and plenty of sunshine. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans from the First Alert Weather Center.
43 degrees in the nation's capital with 6:19 on the Saturday Morning Update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
Saturday Morning Update continues, and there were hearings on Capitol Hill, and the Republicans finally were able to pass the Parents' Bill of Rights in the House, likely DOA in the Democratic Senate. But you've heard a lot about it. You've heard a lot of criticism from the progressives. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez calling it another fascist move by Republicans. However, I think Steve Scalise, Congressman Scalise, kind of lays it out rather succinctly as what the Republicans are trying to do.
Today was an important victory for parents who deserve to have a say in their kids' education. It's unbelievable that here in Washington, you didn't see everybody coming together for such a basic right. The Parents' Bill of Rights, the fact that not a single Democrat would vote to allow parents to have a say in their kids' education shows you how extreme this Democrat Party has become in Washington. And yet parents have been calling for this for 2 years. We saw during COVID with shutdowns, with lockdowns, where parents actually got to look beneath the veil, actually got to see what was happening in their kids' education. And many were alarmed that they weren't seeing their kids learning, reading, writing, and arithmetic. They actually were seeing things that made them concerned to ask questions like, can I see my kids' curriculum? And they were even more shocked when they found out that there were union bosses who didn't want their kids to be able to find out what was going on in the classroom. They didn't want the parents to know.
Well, one other thing people don't want you to know is what's going on with the Biden funding from those Chinese companies that went to Hunter Biden and other Biden family members. Peter Doocy was trying to get an answer out of Corinne Jean-Pierre, the White House briefing room. Well, here's how that went.
House Oversight says they've got bank records showing a Chinese energy company paying three Biden family members through a third party. What were they paid for?
Look, I'm just not going to respond to that from here. Look, we have heard from House Republicans for years and years and years how the inaccuracies and lies when it comes to this issue. And I don't even know where to begin to even answer that question, because again, it's been lies and lies and inaccuracy for the past couple years, and I'm just not going to get into it from here.
So we heard a lot about TikTok this week. We had the hearings, of course, and so many different angles on this story. But I thought this was interesting. This was a question in the White House briefing room to John Kelly. Of course, he's with White House Communications and the National Security Council. And the question comes from Grady Trimble of the Fox News Channel.
Last question. I wanted to follow up on TikTok. Obviously, you've expressed again today the national security concerns with the app. Why then did the president agree to appear in TikTok videos as recently as, I think, St. Patrick's Day?
Again, we have not changed our national security concerns about the app. It's not on it's not for use on government devices, and I don't have anything more for you on that.
Does it send the wrong message if the administration is weighing a ban or could in the future?
We have been very consistent about our concerns over TikTok. There's a CFIUS review underway. I know you want me to tell you more about this, but I'm just not going to get ahead of that.
Some other perspectives on the TikTok hearings. This is Jamal Bowman. He is a Democrat from New York. It's an interesting comments from Congressman Bowman.
Republicans in particular have been sounding the alarm, creating a red scare around China. Let's not be racist towards China and express our xenophobia when it comes to TikTok.
Okay. After those hearings, what's next? Well, I think Kevin McCarthy sums up the bipartisan agreement on what may come out of this.
I think you can find a bipartisan bill to come out of energy and commerce. I know the Senate is working on one, but I believe the House will get one done and will pass it through as well.
We're at 6:23. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. More to come. Stay with us. Saturday Morning Update continues. I'm Rick Fowler, and we have heard some of the comments out of our Secretary of Energy, Jennifer Granholm, haven't given us a whole lot of confidence. And here are some more comments from her. She was on the Hill this week, and you've heard about the potential of banning some gas stoves around the country. And here's how that went.
The gas stoves that would be impacted are high-end gas stoves for the, you know, the most expensive gas stoves. And the reason why they were found to be inadequate is because in many cases they have very heavy grates and the burners can be an oval shape, which causes an excess amount of natural gas to be emitted relative to the pot that's on there. So it's a wasteful use of natural gas.
Oh, okay. That follows. Now, I got to go back. We played this one a week or so ago, but this is when she was praising China and how we can learn from China. So I want to remind you of this, and then we'll get into some of the hearing comments this week where she had to defend that.
The countries all are susceptible to pressure, to peer pressure. They don't want to be the outlier. I mean, there's a couple of countries that we know are outliers and don't care. But I think China has done, has been very sensitive and has actually invested a lot in their solutions, to achieve their goals. So we're hopeful that you know, we can all learn from what China is doing, but the amount of money that they're investing in clean energy is actually, you know, encouraging.
Yeah, but how much pollution are they putting out? So anyway, she was asked about that on the Hill this week, and here's how that went.
Secretary, on 10 March of 2023, you said, and I quote, "We can all learn from what China is doing," end quote, obviously about the environment. At the time you made that comment, are you aware that 30% of the world's CO2 emissions came from China?
Oh, yes.
Are you aware at the time you made that comment also that that China emits more than the U.S., the entire EU, and Japan combined?
Oh, yes.
Were you aware when you made that comment that China brings online 2 coal-fired power plants a week?
Absolutely.
Were you aware that China's coal-fired plants generate over 23% of all the energy of the U.S. production combined?
Yes.
I assume you were also aware that China, in the Paris Climate Agreement, is allowed to increase their emissions through 2030.
Yes.
Knowing that you knew all that when you made the comment, would you like to retract your praise for China?
No, my praise for China was on what they are doing to invest in clean energy, even as they are the world's largest emitter. They are
so
the world's
so
largest.
They're the largest emitter, and
they
we should
the,
be studying
they
what
also,
they're doing.
They're also the largest investor in clean energy technologies. They invest 4 times more than the
reclaiming my time. Reclaiming my time. So they're bringing 2 coal-fired power plants online each week, and you're praising that while you're trying to shut
no,
down.
No, I'm not praising that.
Plants.
I am
here.
Not praising that.
Whatever. Coming up next, we'll talk with Jennifer Harper from the Washington Times. Gordon Chang coming up in this half hour. We'll get into more of the details of TikTok and maybe what you didn't hear about TikTok in those hearings. And John Gizzi coming up, Cheryl Atkinson, Tony Schaefer, and KT McFarland. So stick around with us on the Saturday Morning Update. 6:31 on the Saturday Morning Update. Mike Franciotti is in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
In Virginia, interloop of the Beltway at Van Dorn, you still have 2 lanes blocked with the accident there. It looks like 2 lanes to the left do get by. Once beyond that scene, the interloop moving well. No problems on 395 in Virginia down at Woodbridge, northbound Route 1, Rosedale Court. Have the accident there. Into Maryland, Route 29 still blocked off at Lockwood Drive. All the northbound lanes blocked off, and southbound you lose the left lane. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Showers stick around through lunchtime, but after that, rain goes away. Clouds will be on the decrease, and a little bit of sunshine to end your Saturday. Temperatures into the low 60s right around 6 p.m. Tonight we fall down to 49. Tomorrow it's 68 for a high temperature. Northwest winds around 15 to 20 miles per hour and plenty of sunshine. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
43 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:32 on the Saturday Morning Update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
The Saturday Morning Update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. Jennifer Harper is with us. She writes inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
Former President Trump in Waco, Texas today, and that's just one day out of a busy calendar.
Yes, indeed. Isn't that the truth? Yes, he has a very busy schedule on multiple fronts, but he does have his very first rally, his official entry into the presidential race. That's kind of how it's being built. This is a classic Make America Great Again in Waco, Texas. And it's going to be that whole traditional thing where you have big crowds who get there very early. In fact, the city of Waco is announced they believe that some 15,000 people are going to attend this event. That's not a really large city. It is a city, but they've got lots of folks prepared for 15,000 people coming to their town. And Mr. Trump, if you're curious, is going to be speaking at 5 p.m. Central Time. And there were some interesting headlines that came out of this, you can imagine. Just a couple of them. Trump is holding his next rally in Waco, Texas. He sends a message to the far right, experts say. That came from USA Today. Very symbolic. Trump's plan for Waco rally spurs anti-government supporters. That came from Time magazine. We'll do one more just for the heck of it. Trump rally forcing traffic changes in Waco. And that came from KWKT, which is a Texas-based Fox affiliate down there. And, you know, we're talking kind of about Trump being in the presidential mood. Well, he's kind of upped his ante at his online store. I always look to see what he's got for his fans out there. He does have a new T-shirt. It's got a full-color portrait of himself and Melania Trump. Underneath that is the motto, Unfinished Business. And he's also got his classic red ball cap, which is emblazoned with the numbers 45 and 47 across the that means referring to the 45th and perhaps the 47th president. And he's also got a notable interview in the aftermath of all this, or what's precluding what's coming next week. He'll be on Fox News with Sean Hannity on Monday night. So that's your Trump report for this morning.
Speaking of Republican candidates, although he hasn't declared himself as one yet, what's the latest on Ron DeSantis?
Well, I have, and this is a pretty good report on Governor DeSantis. He's not deserted his post as governor. I kind of follow along what he does down there in the Sunshine State, and most of it is pretty admirable and pretty believable. And just as an example of that, on Thursday, Mr. DeSantis, he had a very enthusiastic crowd of students and teachers, and he revealed that some 20,000 Florida teachers have completed something called the Civics Seal of Excellence course. This is a 55-hour course, and what he's trying to do is to inaugurate all of the traditional American values, sections on the U.S. Constitution, ideas about self-governing American citizens, all kinds of topics like that. He wants to make sure his teachers know this, so they're going to school, they're going to take this course, and, you know, he rewards them with these kind of events, but it's very smart, and it's also helpful, I think, for the general public to see someone do, to see a governor with a high profile like that do something that is this thoughtful, I guess. But anyway, he said the U.S. has had a civics education crisis for many years, so Florida has stepped up for our students. We're boosting civics education and engaging our students in the best way to preserve the constitutional foundations that our country was built on. And, you know, that's kind of made for perhaps conservative media, but not necessarily liberal media. But anyway, you have to admire him for going back to the basics and doing this is one of many of these kind of events that he's doing. In the meantime, also perhaps striking that presidential pose. We don't know that yet. But Mr. DeSantis is an interesting governor to follow.
President Biden has vetoed his first bill in over 2 years, which I guess is a fairly decent track record for the Congress. But how does that compare with other presidents?
Well, this is interesting when we look at, you know, President Biden's very first veto. This appeared in the press kind of like, you know, almost it was a novel of some sort, you know, his first veto. But anyway, this was a bipartisan bill, and it's not the great sterling thing that we have to pay attention to, but it's a measure. He sent a measure back to Congress that would have prohibited retirement plan managers from using certain environmental, social, and corporate governance factors in order to influence investment decisions. I'm not really sure what all that means, but anyway, we'll move along. Anyway, here's what the Heartland Institute has to say about that. They said, Biden vetoed this bipartisan bill not because it lacked merit or is not justified, but because it undermines his attempt to take over the economy under the guise of fighting climate change. That came from Sterling Burnett. He's the director of Climate and Environmental Policy Studies at the Heartland Institute. That's a Chicago-based think tank. And in the meantime, I looked up at this great site. It's called Ballotpedia.com because I was curious about how many vetoes there have been over the course of history here. And, my gosh, they had the answer to that. And here's what they have to say at Ballotpedia. This is our history lesson for this morning. Presidents have issued 2,585 vetoes in American history. And Congress has overridden 112. President Franklin D. Roosevelt vetoed 635 bills, the most of any president. Presidents John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, John Q. Adams, William H. Harrison, Zachary Taylor, Millard Fillmore, and John A. Garfield did not issue any vetoes at all. And dating back to 1981, President Ronald Reagan issued the most vetoes of all with 87, and Biden has issued the fewest, followed by President Donald Trump with 9. And again, that's coming from our pals over there at Ballotpedia. And my gosh, there's your veto lesson for this morning.
President Biden in Canada yesterday, working out a deal with the Canadian government on the northern border issues. But the southern border is still out of control, even though they won't say that. And tell us, what are the numbers looking like?
Well, we've still got so many challenges down there. And I've got some information here from Terrence Jeffrey. He's the editor-in-chief of CNSnews.com. And he had an essay in the Daily Signal, which is an interesting publication out of the Heritage Foundation. So he said, in fiscal year 2017, when Donald Trump was inaugurated as president, the U.S. Border Patrol encountered just 2 individuals on the terrorist watch list trying to sneak across the southern border between the points of entry. In fiscal year 2018, it encountered 6. In fiscal year 2019, it encountered none. And in fiscal year 2020, it encountered 3. So that's a pretty good track record there for Mr. Trump. Now here we go on into the future. Mr. Jeffrey writes, in fiscal year 2021, the year President Joe Biden was inaugurated, there was a substantial shift in the trend. That year, the number of individuals on the terrorist watch list that the Border Patrol encountered trying to sneak across the southern border had increased 5-fold to 15. Then, in fiscal year 2022, it climbed to 98. So far, in fiscal year 2023, which isn't even half over yet, the Border Patrol has encountered 69 individuals on the terrorist watch list trying to sneak across our southern border between the ports of entry. How many on the terrorist watch list have actually succeeded in illegally crossing our southern border into the United States? There is no way to know, he says. What we do know is that it only took 19 foreign terrorists who had made their way into the United States to hijack 4 domestic flights on September 11th, 2001. And again, that's coming from a pretty powerful bit of writing there from Mr. Jeffrey from CNSnews.com.
One more poll for the road, and this one has to do with our feelings about finance. It comes from CBS, and what are they saying?
Well, there are a lot of people who are very concerned that we're going to have another one of these really hair-raising financial crises like we had way back in 2008. Do you remember that, our listeners? If you're worried, 47% of U.S. adults now think it is somewhat likely the country will experience another crisis involving banks and financial institutions similar to what occurred in 2008. And this is kind of across the board. 48% of Republicans and 50% of Democrats agree with that. And moving down, 28% overall think it's very likely that this is going to happen. Again, we have a lot of similarities there. 37% of Republicans and about 19% of Democrats agree. Perhaps they're not quite as worried at this point, but let's move on down the poll. 22% overall think it's not very likely that this is going to happen. 13% of Republicans and 28% of Democrats agree. Looks like they're kind of getting a little protective there. And 14% of Trump voters and 32% of Biden voters also agree. Last but not least, 3% overall think it is very likely this will happen. Includes 2% of Republicans and 3% of Democrats agree with that. So CBS is filling us in on whether we're going to have something to dread in the future. So we'll just kind of have to wait and see on that one.
Jennifer Harper, Inside the Beltway, The Washington Times. You can follow her on Twitter at Harper Bulletin. As always, thank you very much.
It's my pleasure, and have a good weekend, everyone.
It is 6:44. It is the Saturday morning update. Jim Trusty's got the weekend off. We will be talking with Gordon Chang next. But first, Mike Franciotti is in the WMAL Traffic Center.
No problems at this time on the Beltway in Maryland, between the Beltways 95 and the Parkway at this time without issue. Going into Virginia, the interloop at Van Dorn Street, still have the accident there, and it's blocking two lanes. No issues on 95 in Virginia, wide open from Springfield to Fredericksburg. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Storm Watch 7 forecast.
Showers stick around through lunchtime, but after that, rain goes away, clouds will be on the decrease, and a little bit of sunshine to end your Saturday. Temperatures into the low 60s right around 6 p.m. Tonight we fall down to 49. Tomorrow it's 68 for a high temperature. Northwest winds around 15 to 20 miles per hour and plenty of sunshine. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans from the First Alert Weather Center.
44 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:45, the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
The Saturday morning update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by Gordon Chang, and he is the author of The Great U.S.-China Tech War and three other key books on the topic. Gordon, great to have you with us this morning.
Thank you so much, Rick.
We saw the TikTok hearings in Washington this week. And the president of TikTok took some hits from just about every media outlet and both parties. But in all of what we saw, what didn't we see? You have a keen insight. And what maybe is underneath some of this that we just didn't catch?
Couple things, Rick. First of all, when the TikTok CEO, Xu Chu, said that when Project Texas is put in place, that no data of Americans on TikTok will be available to foreign parties. Project Texas is essentially Oracle in Texas storing all of the data so that it's not available to, for instance, China. But we got to remember that even if that works on paper, theoretically, there's a problem, and that is that ByteDance is subject to a legal compulsion to spy for two reasons. First of all, there's China's 2017 national intelligence law, but also the Communist Party's top-down system that requires obedience from every Chinese entity. And I think that ByteDance could use its position as a shareholder of TikTok in the U.S. to do either entice employees to commit espionage, bribe them, intimidate them, or otherwise steal information. So although those protections look good on paper, they, as a practical matter, don't protect U.S. data.
A lot of attention is paid to the data harvesting through TikTok. But what about the messaging? What methods does China use, if in fact they do, of messaging across TikTok to the American youth?
There are two national security threats that TikTok poses. One is the harvesting of data, surreptitious taking of that data and illegally transferring out of the U.S. The second is the algorithm that curates content. In other words, the algorithm that determines what your children see and what they don't see. And China has used that algorithm to foment violence on American streets. They did that in 2020, but also to push critical race theory, glorify drug use. Last year, they were amplifying Russian disinformation on TikTok. So it is China's spy balloon that is on 150 million American phones. This, unfortunately, is something that can't be cured by China remaining and owning TikTok and controlling the algorithm. So that means that either we ban TikTok or we arrange a sale where an American party controls the algorithm. We cannot allow Beijing to do that.
What else may we not have caught in these hearings and all of the coverage this week?
Well, Beijing knows that TikTok is a tool against the U.S., and yet we Americans have not been able to prevent China from using TikTok. Remember, President Trump banned TikTok as one of the last things that he did in office. And one of the first things that President Biden did was to reverse the ban. China looks at that as a failure of American political will, a failure of the United States to deal with known national security threats. So we have to do something about TikTok immediately so that Beijing understands that we will defend our society.
You have studied China and Xi Jinping for his entire rule. What do you think is behind the Biden administration's approach? In other words, you know, we always hear, well, we don't want to have a conflict with China. We don't want to have a conflict with Iran. Is that the way to handle China? And how do you just feel about the administration's approach in general?
Well, when you say you don't want a conflict, what you're doing basically is saying to Beijing, create some tension and we'll back down. So what we really have to do is to say to Beijing, we're defending our values, we're defending our country, and we don't mind the tension, so bring it on. Now, of course, that's dangerous, but the point is, because of three decades of misguided policy, every course of action is dangerous. And the most dangerous course of action of all is to do what we've done for those three decades, which is always try to avoid confrontation. Because by doing that, we have made the Chinese regime more aggressive. We've made the Chinese regime more aggressive by basically showing everybody in China that aggression works. And so, therefore, we've legitimized the worst elements in the Chinese political system.
One note, you mentioned TikTok amplifying Russian messaging. And that brings us to the meeting, of course, this week with Xi Jinping and President Vladimir Putin, a three-day meeting. So many of the people that have analyzed it and written about it are just talking about the new world order and the alignment against the U.S. I don't know how seriously they're taking it behind the scenes in the administration, but they just haven't seemed to be taking this very seriously on the surface.
Oh, clearly they haven't. Remember Xi Jinping's parting words to Vladimir Putin on Wednesday. Xi Jinping said, change is coming, change that has not been seen in 100 years. And then he said to Putin, and we are driving this change together. And clearly that says that the Chinese don't believe that the United States is a factor anymore. Now, the Biden administration is oblivious to this. Look, the world is dividing into camps, and China and Russia are the core of a new axis. And the Biden team doesn't want to acknowledge that. Well, if you can't acknowledge reality, you can't deal with reality. And that right now is the central problem with Biden foreign policy.
So China seems to have Russia in their pocket. They have Iran in their pocket. Where do they go next?
Well, you know, they have the United States in their pocket, too. Or at least that's what they think. You know, we have this issue of Hunter Biden. And last week, Hunter Biden's legal team said that Hunter and Hallie Biden and James Biden, they received money as good faith seed funds, quote unquote. Well, that's an admission of corruption, because corruption is the only explanation why a Chinese company would transfer such large sums to Hunter Biden in these circumstances. There's no contract or anything like that. Really, what this is saying is, look, we were paid off. Now, that should raise alarm bells in the FBI, in the Justice Department, and in the United States as a whole, because that suggests that the President of the United States has been bribed by China. Now, I'm not saying that is 100% the case, but that's what it looks like. And you know, there's something else, Rick, and that is the Chinese actually believe that they have bought the Biden family. We know this from what they've been saying. And so this is something that the Justice Department needs to look at, because there's a real possibility that the President of the United States is working not on behalf of the United States, but on behalf of our enemy.
We saw the pomp and circumstance, obviously the global media coverage of the Xi-Putin meeting. But what about the strategic resources that each brings to the table? How do they complement each other moving forward?
Vladimir Putin is the weaker partner, but in the sense he's driving that partnership by these aggressive actions and really forcing China to come in and support him. Now, what China brings are the money, the propaganda resources, diplomatic resources, lethal assistance, and all the rest of it. And the reason why Vladimir Putin is still fighting right now is because China has been supporting him across the board, And while the Biden administration continues to issue warnings to Beijing, it doesn't impose costs. But the point is that China is clearly crossing the red lines that the Biden administration has put in place. And the Chinese are, I think, now see the United States as being not a factor at all, because we aren't willing to enforce those red lines that have been up to now publicly announced a number of times by the Secretary of State, by Jake Sullivan and others.
Gordon Chang, and you can follow Gordon on Twitter at Gordon G. Chang. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rick.
6:55 Saturday morning update. We've got John Gizzi coming up, the White House correspondent at Newsmax, and then Cheryl Atkinson. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer will be with us, as well as KT McFarland. So it's all coming up on the Saturday morning update right after the 7 o'clock news with Heather Curtis.